Well, it is good to be with you. This is the first time I've preached in a little while. Thank you. Before I jumped into the passage, I just wanted to tell you, just from my heart, that I was on paternity leave, and I think what I wanted you to know is just that Christina and I we've really appreciated the way that you as a community have cared for us. We've shared in the past about some of our struggles with fertility and that there being a lot of loss in that. And you cared for us and you grieved with us during that. And we were touched by that. But I think something we've also appreciated just as, we got pregnant again and we've been able to welcome this little girl, that you've also celebrated with us. And that's been something that just we've really appreciated and we've felt cared for, and you've brought us meals, and there's always like a million different clothes and gadgets and things like that babies need these days. And just you've been very compassionate and generous towards us, and even just things where it's like, I'm like, oh, you guys know me. Like, I got like Bodhi gift cards so I can get good coffee, and like Portos so I can get my croissants, and things like that where I'm just like, it's just very thoughtful. And so I just wanted you to know that we've felt cared for by you, and just we appreciate it. And so thank you so much for that. Getting to experience that as a part of a community, you get to kind of get this picture of what being loved can look like. It kind of gives a feeling of like, I'm not alone in the things that I'm going through, and it makes the church a very endearing place. I recognize in it that I kind of have the privilege of being able to stand in front of you on the stage and talk to you about some of the things that the hurts that I have and the things that I carry, and it gives you the opportunity that you've responded and cared for me and my family. But that's not an advantage that everyone and most people in our church have. That most of you don't have opportunities to come and stand up on stage if you wanted to talk about ways that you're hurt and the ways that you need to be loved. And so there's a lot of places where there's wounds that are held in private, or there's just not necessarily the space to talk about those things. And for me, this was an experience that was very positive and affirming in how the church cared. But many people, probably all of us, actually carry experiences where I actually feel let down by the church. And places where maybe you feel like you're carrying a wound that wasn't noticed, and places where you feel like, why did this happen? Did nobody care? Did nobody notice? Did I not matter enough? And there can be a part where we can feel disillusioned in the church because of that. One of the things that sometimes then we can, when we get to a place that we're very discouraged, we can look at the church and say, well, what is wrong with the church? Why is the church like this? Is the church doesn't seem to function the way it's supposed to. And one of the things we can get discouraged to the point where maybe we feel like I need to guard my heart, I need to protect myself, maybe I should just leave the church. And one of the things that is important for us to say is, as much as we need to recognize and acknowledge that, it's also important for us to recognize that the church has never really had its act together. Like, we've always been a flawed bunch. Like, us as individuals, but also throughout history. And when we look throughout history, even from the very beginning of the church, there's some mild level of comfort we can take that the church has always been a little bit messed up. And we've always kind of been a little clumsy with some things, and there's things that need to be spoken to and addressed, but there's also a part where it's not that the church wasn't super great in the past, and now we're just clumsy and blowing it left and right. And there's a passage that we look at today where we see that the church messed up on some things. And there were some steps that needed to be taken to address it, because for the very reason that the complaints that were brought up were valid, the wounds that actually happened were significant and needed to be addressed. So as we look at this passage, we carry the tension of the church is something both that we need and we love and we cherish, but also the reality is it's also a place where we get hurt. And so somehow we need to navigate that, and we need to navigate it in a healthy way. And so the church, we don't need to ignore the problems, but we need to acknowledge them and also address them. As we look in, we're going to be in Acts chapter 6. Just as a reminder for context, we've talked in the past about how the church has just been established, it's been starting, it's been growing, it's dynamic, there are people coming to faith, the word is being spread, the gospel is being known in Jerusalem and the surrounding areas. It is a dynamic time in the church, and the church by and large is united in its mission. And then we get to Acts chapter 5, and we get kind of the first sense where there's a couple that is guilty of some sort of self-righteous deception to their community. And we get to now to chapter 6 where we are today, and we see another issue come up. And so this is what happens. We're in Acts chapter 6, verse 1. It says, "In those days, when the number of disciples was increasing, the Hellenistic Jews among them complained against the Hebraic Jews because their widows were being overlooked in the daily distribution of food." I'm going to just pause there for a second. In this, we see that there are Hellenistic Jews, and they're complaining against the Hebraic Jews because their widows aren't getting their portion of the food that is necessary for their sustenance and just their care. If we look at and think about what the church looked like at this time, the church is primarily centered in Jerusalem. It hasn't yet expanded to very much to the surrounding areas, let alone to the Gentiles. So it's primarily a Jewish church. But within it, there's two groups. There's the Hebraic Jews, which were the Jews that lived in Jerusalem and surrounding Judea. They primarily spoke Aramaic. These were people that were culturally fairly traditional and a part of the Jewish community. So they had deep roots in the area that they were living in, going back generations and generations. In contrast, there were the Hellenistic Jews that at some point were a part of the Jewish diaspora and then repatriated back to Jerusalem and Judea, but they were culturally Greek. They spoke Greek, and there was probably a secondary language that they spoke that was related to the area that they were coming from, and so there was a language barrier between the two groups. There was also the cultural barrier. The group, the Hellenists that came back to Jerusalem, they were disadvantaged not just because of the language and the culture, but just they were newer to the area. They didn't have the same social networks established. They didn't have the opportunity to be in one place and develop their living for a long periods of time. If you have insight into family or friends where you've seen an immigrant family, you kind of get the glimpse of just some of the tension that can be there between the first generation and the second generation, or just the people that have lived there longer, where there's disadvantages that the immigrant generation is experiencing. And so there's a part of this where because of this, the Hellenist widows are getting overlooked. It doesn't seem like this was something that was necessarily intentional, but it seems like maybe there was a lack of sensitivity or a lack of awareness to some of the disadvantages that they were experiencing. That people didn't realize the level of need that they had, and they didn't have the same opportunities that the Hebraic Jews had. Widows especially were vulnerable. and there were economic and security vulnerabilities that they had. And so this is a vulnerable group, and so it doesn't say just the widow spoke up, it says the whole Hellenistic community spoke up on their behalf and said, these people are being overlooked, our widows are in need. It seems strange that this happens because just a couple of chapters prior, we read things like this in Acts 2, that all the believers were together and had everything in common. They sold property and possessions and gave to everyone who had need. And people are caring for each other, but then there's this example of oversight where the ball was dropped. And so the Hellenists complained. And so as much as this is a church that is healthy, that is growing, that the gospel is being proclaimed, people are in unity with each other, we still see, even though it's healthy, there's still hurts and wounds that are happening. This is an example of the church. There are places where you can probably look at the church today and you can see there is a dissonance with how the church is supposed to function and how it does function. You hear about things like the Great Commandment. This is in Matthew 22. Somebody says, ask Jesus, what's the greatest commandment of the law? And Jesus says, love the Lord your God with all your heart, all your soul, and all your mind. This is the first and greatest commandment. And then the second is like it, love your neighbor as yourself. You can hear things like this and you can say, but that's not what I see happening in the church. This isn't how it's actually playing out, and that's not right. That there's something here that we're falling short of what we're called to do, and this is something that we need to acknowledge. But there's also part of this, so we need to acknowledge that it's possible that God is softening your heart for this reason. That God is maybe at work in your heart, and you notice that shortcoming, that dissonance, because he's at work in you. That other people might not notice what's going on, but you do. That when we look at this example in Acts 6, the Hebraic Jews were probably oblivious to what was going on. They thought, we're sharing, we're doing what we're supposed to do, we're selling possessions, we're providing for the vulnerable people in our community. It's our widows especially that have needs, and we're caring for them. And they were probably oblivious to the fact that the Hellenists are saying, our widows are struggling, they have needs, and they're getting overlooked. That you might be seeing things that the rest of the church doesn't have, and it's because God is softening your heart towards something. And so take note of that. God is moving in you, and he's drawing your attention to something, and he's saying, notice this group. These people are being overlooked. These people need to be cared for. You know, as I was thinking about this passage, there was a couple in our church that came to my mind that, you know, sometimes as, you know, our churches in general, sometimes a group that we overlook are singles. And sometimes there's a couple that just came to my mind with this, of it's a married couple that has been intentional within our church about reaching out to the singles in our church, inviting them to their house, spending time with them, but even advocating among others of they have a perspective that matters too. You know, and there's a part of us that, especially those of us that are married, those of us that have kids, that sometimes we can almost dismiss or overlook the singles in our church. And there's insight that they have that we might not be attentive to, and there's needs that they have that we can be guilty of overlooking. And God moves, softening our hearts in us as individuals to speak up on their behalf. And to say, this is what I notice God doing, and this is a place where there's dissonance, that we're not loving each other to the extent that we're called to. And we need to take note of that, and we need to acknowledge that, and we can affirm that there's truth to that. And we can love the church while still also acknowledging there are places that we're falling short and people that get hurt. The problems within the church need to be addressed because they affect our unity, and that ultimately ends up affecting our effectiveness in our mission. The story continues in Acts 6. In verse 2, it says, "So the 12, being the 12 apostles, they gathered all the disciples together and said, 'It would not be right for us to neglect the ministry of the word of God in order to wait on tables.'" And so they see the reality that this is an issue that needs to be addressed, that people, the widows need to be getting food, but then they make this comment that it's not right for us to do it because our job is to proclaim the word of God. And so they make this statement that, to me, when I read it, initially it sounds a little bit cold, almost a little bit elitist, like, I'm not going to roll up my sleeves and deal with this problem. Let's find the intern to do it or something like that. And there's something that it can sound like it can rub us a little bit wrong when we kind of reflect on their response. But their point is, like, think about the apostles were people that they walked with Jesus throughout his ministry. Jesus was especially attentive to this group in preparing them to lead the church after he ascended. That they had insight and training and giftings that was unique to them and not to the rest of the church. And the central calling that they were given was to proclaim the gospel. They were called to tell others about the gospel, to raise up other leaders, and that was their central purpose. And the reality is they recognize that this is a need, that we need to care for these widows, but there is a limited capacity that they have. And so this is a sentence that a response that can sound a little bit cold, but I think what their reply means is they recognize their dependence on the community, that they can't do everything, and that they need to be focused on the things that they uniquely can do, their calling, and they have to live there, and that there's needs for others. And so they realize that if they were to exchange their calling, if they were to stop proclaiming the gospel and to go and to care for the widows, ultimately it would lead the church off of its mission. And the church would get distracted and something else would be, some other issue would come up because of this. But they still recognize that what the Hellenists are speaking to is a real issue, something that needs to be done. And so they live in this tension where, on one hand, they could neglect the needs of the widows, and you can think of the disunity that's going to continue to brew because of that, or they could neglect their own personal ministry of proclaiming the gospel, and you can think about the long-term implications that that would have and how that would ultimately be short-sighted as well. Within the church today, we have to be cautious that we don't try to address needs by just shuffling around leaders. That this new need comes up, and so we need to have someone leave here from their calling to go and take on this other need to address it and put out a fire. The more we do that, the more we're going to lose focus on what our priority is and the mission that we're given. If we as a church want to grow unified, if we want to grow in maturity, then we have to live out our calling individually. The more we shuffle around leaders, the more we neglect our own ministries to put out the fire somewhere else, the more the church gets distorted and loses balance, and we lose focus on what we're centrally called to. If you can think of examples of this, you know, especially people, you know, around my age, a lot of times in the church, what we clamor for is community. You ask a lot of people around my age, they would say, I want somewhere to belong. And if you go to a church that overemphasizes community, a lot of times what does it look like? A lot of times it looks insular. That primarily we're just focused, I'm trying to find somewhere to belong and make some friends, and we can forget about people that are outside the walls. When you think about churches that put a really strong emphasis and overemphasis on something like compassion or mercy ministries, like where does it often fall short? A lot of times it falls short on proclaiming the word, on strong biblical teaching. Like when you look at churches that have a strong focus on serving, where does it fall short? Like a lot of times there's a lack of compassion for the people who are struggling just to get to church. That sometimes there is a lack of empathy. And if we focus on putting out fires rather than saying focus on what we're centrally called to, as a church we start to get off balance and we lose focus on what Jesus says is most important to us. The church doesn't become more effective or more mature if we're just trying to plug holes. We need to be sensitive to where the Spirit's leading us as a community as a whole, also as individuals. And when people raise up issues, we need to listen and consider their validity. The passage that we're looking at continues. It says that the disciples invited the community to identify Spirit-led leaders among them. Looking in verse 3. It says, brothers and sisters, this is the apostle speaking, choose 7 men from among you who are known to be full of the Spirit and wisdom. We will turn this responsibility over to them and will give our attention to prayer and the ministry of the word. And it says, this proposal pleased the group. After this, it lists out the 7 people that are selected for this. See, the apostles weren't being dismissive of the problem. They weren't being cold and saying, we're not going to deal with this. They're saying it doesn't align with the central calling that we are given individually as apostles, but we need someone else who can help with this. They recognize that they are dependent on other people carrying out their ministry too. That as much as the apostles could be focused on their own calling, they recognize that their calling will ultimately be ineffective if other people aren't doing their calling as well. That there's this mutual dependence that we have. And so they identify 7 people. They place them up as leaders. And these 7 people that are mentioned, all 7 of them have Greek names. And so for the Hellenistic community that is in need of support and protection, they identify 7 Greeks to care for them. And so they name them, they commission them. I think there's a significance that they choose 7 Greeks to care for the Greek widows. These would be people that they would know. The widows knew these 7 people. There was a relationship with them. They were trusted. In the description, it says that in verse 3, it says that they're known to be full of the Spirit and wisdom. They were people that were respected as part of the community. And so they didn't just, these 7 didn't just recognize that there was a problem, that their widows were being overlooked, but they were also people that had the respect and trust of the widows when they entered into this calling. And so they go, they're led by the Spirit, they're people of character and maturity. Imagine if it was just 7 random people that were put in here. Imagine the weight that this could carry. Like, what if these were people that stepped in that weren't ready in their character to take on this leadership role? And so they respond to this inequality by trying to get vengeance. So we're going to give our widows a double portion to make up for what they missed out on before. There has to be a maturity to them stepping into this role so that they can do this with wisdom, to do this with discernment, so that there's not retribution that's being taken for being overlooked. So we might see, as we look at our church, problems. There might be real problems that we see that need to be addressed. God might be working in you, softening your heart, pointing out something that you are being called to working towards. So first notice, is where is it that God is softening your heart? What need has he been moving? And notice and affirm that's significant. That's something to address. That's something to speak to. But also notice this, that the people who had an impact on addressing this issue, those seven leaders that were chosen, they were people that were respected and were trusted. That we can look and we can see, I see the problems in the church. These are things that I notice that the church needs to do better. But if I want to have the opportunity to do something about it, I need to earn the trust of those people that I'm trying to help. That people need to look at me and they need to know that I care about them and I'm speaking on their behalf, not because I'm wanting authority, but because I care about them and I want to help and that they can trust me. People that can look and say, I know that the Spirit is at work within that person and that person has good intentions for living out the Great Commandment. They're trying to love other people like they love themselves. And so what I'm asking you is when you see those things that you're shaking your head saying, that's not how the church is supposed to be. Have you spent time developing the trust with those people that you're trying to help? Would they look at you and would they say, I trust you. I know that you have good intentions for me, that you would love me like you love yourself. Because otherwise we're going to see that first step of just noticing the problem, but we haven't done the work yet to be able to help fix it. And this is what we're called to. You can think of the person if you've been a part at a job where you have someone new who comes in and the first thing that they try to do is they try to tell you five things that could make your company more efficient. Or you have someone join a small group or something where they say, well, if we did this, this, and this, it would be so much better. And you're just, maybe they're right, but they haven't spent the time to develop that trust yet. And so they can't really be a part of the solution, even if they do notice something that's true. So our calling is develop that trust with these people. Be attentive to the Spirit and where the Spirit is working, what he's laying on your heart, but also develop the trust so that you can have those opportunities. Ephesians 4 speaks of our dependence on each other to be living this out. In Ephesians 4, it says, from him being Jesus, from Jesus the whole body, joined and held together by every supporting ligament, grows and builds itself up in love as each part does its work. As God puts people on your heart and softens your heart towards some of the needs within the church, it can feel like you're doing this in isolation, just trying to care for individuals. But by doing that work, that helps us together stay on mission. To stay focused on the individual callings and the corporate calling that Jesus has given us. So you're not doing this alone, but the work that you're doing is a part of a larger community, but it's a mission that's unique to you. But start by building trust with those people. Let them trust you. Let them know you. The wonderful thing about this is as this passage concludes, this story ends with verse 7, and this is how it ends. It says, so the word of God spread. The number of disciples in Jerusalem increased rapidly, and a large number of priests became obedient to the faith. That this issue comes up, there is pain that happens, there are widows that are being overlooked, but it gets addressed, people stay responsible and owning their own mission, and there's unity that comes from this, and the mission continues to move forward, that the gospel keeps getting proclaimed, and people continue to come into a relationship with Jesus. It's going to be normal for us to have issues that come up, and it's going to be normal for us to get hurt within the church. But we can affirm those things, that those things do happen. But if we want to be a part of bringing healing and restoration, we have to be known by each other, and we have to allow people to look at us and know that we have the good intentions for them.